an iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving higher time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving higher.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. Marcus with Sean Hackett. This edition of the Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by Dawson Tire and Wheel, your premier ag tire and wheel provider in North America, helping people grow. Tractor Zoom delivering insights and dry shod boots, the official work boot of the Moving Iron Podcast. Sean is with Hackett Financial out of Boca Raton, Florida. And Sean is a guest on here every week because he has good stuff to talk about. So Sean, let's talk about this week here. We have seen the bullish trend that we have been talking about here for a while on this, but it's feels like it's built on a house built on the sand here, because it's all based on Chinese buying. So as soon as the Chinese stop buying, then we start looking at the January, February time frame when they would typically be buying from South America, Brazil and Argentina. We could see a drop off in buying, and you know what goes on with the pricing then. So I guess talk about that a little bit and what you see happening there.
Well, predicting Chinese buying is very difficult, as you know.
Right.
It comes and it goes and it comes and it goes. And usually, you know, if they're going to buy stuff, they do like to buy at this time of the year. So it's not that them buying this time of the year is a surprise. It's just that they came, you know, they bought at a very high end, and surprised everybody. And quite frankly, they did it at a time that we were harvesting and our supplies weren't quite ready yet. And they just kind of overran the market at a time that the dollar was weak. We're getting some inflationary pressures. Speculators were gotten a little more excited about putting some money into the whole commodity space. And so then you got momentum, the algorithms, you know, kind of jump on board, and so you get it. I mean, by the way, you know, we were bullish in August, as you know. We were expecting a pretty, you know, good rally into the fall, and we've gotten that. But certainly, you know, one has to be a little cautious. We've put a lot of expectation here, and as much as, you know, a lot of people are claiming that some of the move here is because of the weather in South America, it's way too early to make any. The biggest thing I've been reading is the soybean crop progress, planting progress in Brazil is way behind. In Mato Grosso, which is the key state for soybeans. And so you go, okay, let's see. There were 9% planted last week versus 16%. But now we're getting some good rains, which is, you know, they're finally getting some rains in that area, which, you know, the way I understand planting these days, they really want to do it. I mean, they're getting an all-time record high price down there right now. I think they'll be back to normal in a couple of weeks, if not even ahead of normal. And I don't buy into this whole, oh, the crop's going to be real delayed in harvest, and so and exports are going to be delayed. I don't think any of that can be ascertained right now. If they get on with it, they can catch up really quick, and maybe we'd be talking about a week or two delay in soybean harvest in Brazil, but that's not going to make any difference. So I think people are making up stories, Casey, you know, to try to explain the move when quite frankly, it's simply the Chinese overrunning the market with their purchases. If they weren't purchasing like they are, you know, prices would be considerably lower, higher than they were in August, but considerably lower. So let's call it for what it is. This is a Chinese buying bid rally. At some point, the market is going to factor that in, or the Chinese, as you said, Casey, is going to back off. They're going to cancel some orders. Who knows? But all of a sudden, you know, there's going to be a question mark that maybe this demand was front end loaded, and on the backside they just pull away, and we've overestimated the actual demand coming from them. And so we have to be very careful. You know, just remember, a few months back, there's not a person out there who thought they're going to buy anything.
Right.
And now everyone's an expert that they know they're going to continue to buy. They don't know anything. They don't know anything. They don't know anything. I don't know what they're going to do, Casey. I don't know what they're going to do.
Yep.
But my suspicion is they're going to pull away from the market here for too long. So
I barely think the Chinese know what they're going to do. It's just because they're
it's hard to know. Is it politically driven right now? Is it because of the phase one trade deal? Are they getting ready for a currency devaluation and that's why they're buying a lot? Do they have food shortages? I mean, I know they had some difficult weather. The reality is we have no information that we can rely on coming out of China. Zero. It's all speculation. We don't get any information from them that we can rely on. And even, you know, the USDA really can't say the truth there either. So we're left what I call it's a black box. We're just left to speculate about what the truth is. So the truth is it's probably a combination of all these things. But at the end of the day, you know, we don't think that the kind of purchases that they're making right now are sustainable, I guess is what I'm getting at. So,
yep. So let's talk about cotton for a minute. Cotton broke through the 70-cent mark yesterday. They're up around 71.04. We had Hurricane Delta come through that did kind of laid, I don't know, it came at probably a pretty bad time. What they didn't have harvested was in the field, and what was in the field in bales, you know, got soaked with rain. So I guess talk about what you see happening in the cotton market.
You know, the cotton market has just, every step of the way, weather has just chipped and chipped. Texas was extremely hot and extremely dry earlier in the season that clipped the crop. You had three hurricanes go through the deep south in a lot of cotton areas. The last one, of course, occurring when open bowls were wide open and a lot of cotton that was harvested was sitting out in the outdoors in storage bins waiting to be processed. And so, you know, it just, they keep chipping away at the supply. They keep chipping away at the quality. Now we're getting some potential for some mild frost conditions in certain Texas areas, you know, for a little while. And, you know, once again, it just keeps chipping and chipping. And so the market keeps ratcheting up because it keeps getting a reason that the supplies, we haven't gotten to where the supplies are yet. So usually once the hurricane season ends and we factor all that in and, you know, you reach some kind of a blow-off top or a crescendo, I think that's what we're going through now, this final thrust higher on this last bit of weather that the market was – not expecting to occur, to price in the high, and then the market, you know, starts to work its way down after. Because look, I don't think we're going to have a raging, booming global economy, and certainly food. While food purchases are a necessity, buying a lot of clothes not necessarily a necessity, and so demand for cotton, I think, is going to be, you know, lackluster, and so these kind of prices are going to stimulate substantial increase in global acres. And so the market is kind of pricing a lot of this in right now. And so we'd be a little worried that this final surge might be the last part of this move that's been going on all summer long. So,
yep. All right. So wheat conditions right now, when you start looking at what's going on out there, you know, wheat has been a leader in a lot of ways, getting things going because there's a lot of dryness in about any place that grows wheat, which is everywhere. So if you look at what's going on in the wheat belt in Kansas and the Dakotas, I mean, it's just hot and dry. Moving into some winter weather that's coming in here this week, over the weekend, and you take a look what's going on in Russia and the Black Sea, it's just dry, 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 dry. And I've read several reports. I sent you one that about the other day that, you know, the climatologist from the University of Nebraska was talking about if we get this normal rain or normal moisture during the winter months here, we'll still be behind because we didn't get enough what we had. So as you look at wheat and what we see going through the winter months into spring, doesn't bode very well for what's going on there. So what's your thoughts on wheat?
Well, you know, Casey, winter wheat's been one of our top markets to be focused on during this increased weather volatility period that we've been expecting to see. To put things into perspective, the crop conditions in Kansas, for example, the number one state for growing Kansas City winter wheat, is the lowest rated crop for this time of the year since 1985, just to put that out there. The Russian wheat crop is the driest planting season for winter wheat in Russia in 50 years, just to put that into perspective. So we have a disaster on our hands because we're going into this dormancy season with horrific poor conditions, terrible establishment, When a wheat crop goes into dormancy in a weakened condition, it's extremely more sensitive and vulnerable to even a mild winter kill event, meaning it can't even withstand a mild winter kill event should you get one. We're not anticipating a long, cold winter, but we are expecting a short, cold winter. And so all it takes, Casey, is one shot at the wrong time when there's no snow cover, and you could cause additional damage over the winter months before you even come out of dormancy and have what we expect is going to be a very hot, dry, classical La Nina amplification from the grand solar cycle minimum in both regions. It's just to put this into perspective, the last time we had a setup like this, the Russian wheat crop, I believe in 2010-11, was down 35%. We don't think they're going to be able to plant 15 to 20% of the crop just because there's not enough moisture to even plant it. And probably 20 or 25% of the crop that they did plant either won't establish or it'll establish in very poor condition. So they are setting up, Casey, for a crop that could be down 30 to 50%, depending on exactly how dire the spring conditions are into the early summer. So, you know, of course, that's out there. You know, that's not tomorrow. I mean, that's late spring, summer. But we're setting up for a significant shortage in wheat. And so the question is, how much is the market willing to price in now, and how long, and when will it kind of take a back seat and wait for the spring conditions to come to make its final determination? Because it is a ways away. There is plenty of wheat available now, and of course it also comes out to what will Russia do if they really know their crop's in big trouble? They're just going to ban exports. Just say we're calling along all exports. No more exports for anybody because we want to keep the rest of the wheat for ourselves. I mean, we don't know how all this is going to play out, but this is a big, big fundamental story. And we always say as wheat goes, so go the grain complex. I mean, it's the number one market that really, if it gets into a tight supply and a bullish mode, it is really what creates the big overall grain market surges in the past. So we really keep an eye on winter wheat, because we think it's really setting up for an historical fundamental weather supply shock event going forward. And so the thing about 2010-11, that was really not a planting drought. That was a spring-summer drought that caused that big problem. We're getting this planting drought, and we're going to get that spring-summer drought combined, which we didn't get in 2010-11. So it's really kind of unprecedented, quite frankly. It's quite unprecedented to see both happen in the same year. So we're very, very, we'd be very, very mindful of that market as a trigger for the grains and for something there to go on pretty wild here, you know, to the upside potentially. Yep. So.
Okay, so your latest report came out, and you talked about some different buy signals from your smart money, buy signals that you see coming up, and sell signals and those kind of things. And you are talking about, you had a podcast that you put out as well about that. So talk about that report and what you see happening there.
Well, we put this podcast out to our subscribers because we've been suggesting that we're going to go through a phase transition in grain markets. We've been talking about this for quite a few years. That this period from late 2020 into 22, a phase transition means, Casey, going from one price level to an order of magnitude higher. So going from, you know, $2.50 corn to $7 corn in 2006 to 2008 was a phase transition. Going from $3 corn to $8 corn between 2009 and 2011-12 was a phase transition. Going from, you know, $1 corn to $4 corn between 1971 and 1973 was a phase transition. We believe we're going to go through a phase transition over this next couple of years. And what we wanted to do in this podcast is provide some benchmarks or some signposts that people could watch and follow to determine, is it underway yet or are we still in the building phase? So far, what we think, Casey, is we've begun the first move up, but that we're still in the building, the developing phase of this phase transition that we think is going to start in the spring and then really, really, you know, take off into the spring of 2022. But one of the most important things to follow is the KC winter wheat market, like we just spoke of. And there's a chart we showed that we've broken the 10-year downtrend line. So Casey Wheat has been in a downtrend for 10 years.
Yes, it has.
And the last week we finally broke through that down, which means we've now begun a multi-year uptrend. And the $6 level. So, you know, if you look at the $6 level, we've bumped our head against six quite a few times over the last 5 to 10 years. When the KC wheat market is ready to break through six and you see that breakout take place and confirm, you will have a good indication that this phase transition in grains and in wheat is starting to take place. It's really a very, I mean, there's a lot of things we talk about in the podcast, but that's is a simple thing to look at that anyone can pull up a chart of KC wheat and follow and monitor for themselves. Please pay attention to the $6 KC wheat area. We think that's going to be the key litmus test for when this phase transition of grains is about to take off. Our best guess right now is we're expecting a pause after, you know, to try to absorb this move, and that we think we'll be more ready to do that once we get closer to, you know, late winter, spring. But it's possible it could go right now, you know, and it's not up to us to outguess that. We're just looking for the markers to tell us when it's about to take place. But that's certainly one good indication for when this outlook that we have is about ready to go. And, you know, if you look back at the phase transition, KC wheat hit, you know, $9 or $10 back in 2010 on 12, and, you know, hit intraday $12 in 2008. So, you know, those would be areas that one on a chart would say, you know, maybe are possible if we really break this thing out and we get into one of these dynamic phase transition moves that periodically we do when we get the right conditions all coming together at the same time, which it looks to us like we're doing right now. So,
okay. Well, that's good news. Good news for the wheat grower. But there's still a long ways to go before the wheat crop comes out. So there's a lot of things could happen, especially with, like this weekend here, we're supposed to have, it's supposed to be like 9 degrees for lows in the single digits. And we're, you know, we've got some snow coming, but it's not, I don't know how much, but it's not going to be a lot to speak of. So it'll be interesting to watch the weather this week, you know, what happens, especially with this money. Sugar beets are still in the ground. This hard freeze coming, so it's going to be interesting how that plays out. We'll have something to talk about next week when we look at.
Well, you know, sugar beets got clipped with a freeze, you know, a year ago, I guess it was.
Yes, it was. So, yeah,
you know, man.
About the same time.
Deja vu.
Yeah, it was.
Remember, we're already importing sugar, as you know, which is really unusual, and we're importing it, so. We don't need another short sugar beet crop, I'll tell you that.
No,
so.
this will be they've had a chance to get quite a few of them out here just because of the way the weather's been of late, but there's still quite a bit out there, and it's going to freeze them. So we'll see what happens there. All right, let's talk about the cattle market real quick, and we'll close things down. The cattle market has had its fair ups here over the last week and a half or so, but it's been pretty volatile. So talk about what's going on in the cattle market. It seems like for every day it's up, there's at least a third of the time that it goes back down. So talk about what you see happening there.
Now, the biggest problem that we have for the cattle market is we just don't believe domestic demand is going to hold up this holiday season when the demand is, you know, needs to be strong. We know, looking at the cattle on feed report, there's just a ton of animals waiting in the wings. The weights are way up. We think demand's going to struggle. And remember, if we're going into a big phase transition in feed prices, it's never good for cattle prices because it leads to herd liquidation. Because you say, feeding $8 corn to my animal doesn't work very well.
Right. Yep.
So the big bull market in livestock tends to be after the phase transition's over and the prices come back down. So if you remember when we had the 10, 11, 12 surge, you know, hogs and cattle prices struggled, and then 13, 14, we had a parabolic move because there were no animals coming to the market. We liquidated everything. The animals being retained to rebuild the herd, and then demand was strong. So this is just not a good time for livestock prices if we're in the early stages of a phase transition higher for feed prices. It's going to be a difficult time for – doesn't mean not going to have rallies from time to time, but it's not going to be a very exciting, dynamic time for livestock prices, simply because inevitably the livestock producer never buys enough feed. He gets caught having to chase feed prices higher, and then he has no choice but to liquidate instead of feeding these animals, and it just adds extra supply that's not needed. And I'm not really excited about, you know, the global or U.S. economy next year. I still think we have a lot of problems we have to work through, and beef is just not a cheap item to put on the table for your family right now. It just isn't. So, yep. You know, I we've been bearish correctly. It's been coming down, and, you know, we still think it could probably come a little lower, but we're just not excited about it. You know, I just think you're in a market that you're just going to have to try to look for rallies to sell during this period of a rapid grain market increase. You'll get your day. You know, you'll get your dynamic time to do really, really well, but it'll be 2 years after the next 2 years, if you follow what I'm saying. You know, it'll be after this big surge in grains are over and they come crashing down, and then they'll have their data to really do well. So, you know, unfortunately, that's kind of where we see it. And we think the hog market, you know, we had been very constructive, the hog market. But remember, the big thing for hogs, Casey, is we know that the Chinese are rapidly, rapidly growing the hog herd again.
Yeah, they are.
They're consuming tons of corn, tons of bean meal, tons of feed. Those supplies will be available next, the back half of next year. And they're going to be massive. And so all of a sudden, the exports that we've been afforded, I mean, the U.S. has been able to ship so much meat out, it's going to kind of close up. That gap's going to really narrow. And we're not going to have the domestic demand to fill in the gap when that happens. And so you have to really think of the hog market beyond just the feed price issue. Is this is the last hurrah, this last set of buying by the Chinese ahead of their February, March holiday season, where they tend to stock up on their pork supplies. This is kind of the final push for export demand from the U.S. to China before I think they start backing away. And, you know, I'm not saying they won't still be buyers, but not at the blistering pace that they have been. And we need them to be there, considering how many animals we have out there that will that continue to need to come to the market. And the biggest concerning thing for us is the animal weights. The population of very heavy hog weights is just the growth rate is enormous. I mean, it just is unprecedented to see that kind of increase in heavy weighted hog animals. And so that's extra supply we don't normally have. So unfortunately, I think that this upper 60, 70 cent area on the December contract, you know, it's going to be pretty tough for the market to work through that. Given that, I think that most of the rally that we had been looking forward to from the 50 cent area, when we were on your program talking about being optimistic about price, we think most of that price rise is behind us. And so it's, you know, this is a price level that hog producers can do okay with versus 50 cents. You know,
right. Well, good stuff as usual, Sean. If folks want to reach out to you and ask you some questions about what's going on in the marketplace, or just get your opinion about things, or just check out what you have to offer there at Hackett Financial, what's the best way to do it?
Our website is Hackett, H-A-C-K-E-T-T, advisors.com. We have all kinds of information on there for them to take a look at to see if our approach might be of value to your listeners. I also mentioned last week that I was going to do this Real Vision interview on our climate work, which I did send to you. You know, you might want, you know, that might be something for your listeners to kind of check out if they have an interest in this topic. It's an hour and 10 minute long question and answer interview. So it's not for the person that's trying to do a quick view on the reef. But if you're really into this subject matter, I think it dovetails with a lot of the things we've done on your programs. And so, you know, that might be something for people to want to check out. So,
well, right on. Yeah. I'll link to that and get that out to everybody. Look for that here this week. I'll have that out for everyone to take a look at. So I appreciate that, Sean. And I'm Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Make sure you check me out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That's where you're going to find the latest edition of the Moving Iron Podcast. Also, any blogs that I put out as well will show up there. Check out movingironllc.com for all the latest news about the Moving Iron Summit. That is scheduled to go January 20th through the 22nd in Nashville, Tennessee at the Renaissance Hotel downtown. Sean will be there, and he'll be giving the same climate speech. And answering some questions there. So a lot of good information there to kind of wrap up what we're talking about here, at least talk about here on the podcast. every Thursday. Sean will be there, and there'll be some other great speakers as well. Also, check out the Global Ag Network and the great podcasters there. So with that, I am Casey Seymour, Sean Hackett. Let's go move some iron, folks. Out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Move.